In case you haven't heard, it's officially an Abercrombie summer. The A&F Vacation Shop has everything on your packing mood board. I desperately need their new one piece, the A&F Marina. It's strapless, so flattering, and paired with denim shorts will be my go-to beach outfit this summer. Finally, your suitcase isn't complete without finding that dress. You know, the one for the photo shoot. Abercrombie's boho dresses have that perfect beachy romantic look. Make it an Abercrombie summer. Shop their newest arrivals in-store, online, and in the app.
Hi everyone, welcome to the Value Inspiration Podcast. My name is Ton Dobbe and I'm the founder of Value Inspiration. The purpose of my company is to help business software companies rethink what can be to become remarkable again. The goal that I have in this podcast is to inspire new forms of value creation by sharing compelling ideas and stories about the potential that we can unlock when technology and people blend in the right way. So my strong belief is that we can think big, and therefore we should. Doing so will help to create a better world for all of us. And this podcast is all about that. The guest on my podcast today is Richard Boyd, CEO of Tenjo AI.
That's the sort of thing that drives me, is trying to bring technologies to bear on problems to solve them in ways that humans alone cannot. It's looking at whatever activity you're engaged in and trying to figure out what should humans be doing with our effort and our attention, and what should we be turning over to machines? And the answer to that question changes almost every year, almost every month now. You can do something one time and have it not only pay off a 10x, 10 times return on investment, but that return on investment is an annuity, right? It's something you're gonna get every single year. So the earlier you do that, the more effective and competitive you're going to be. That's what everyone should be waking up and looking at this carefully. You can afford not to say, you know, not to look at this capability.
This is Richard, CEO of Tenjo AI. Over the last 26 years, Richard has led and helped create some of the most innovative game technology companies in the industry. He has served as a game technology consultant for a wide variety of industries, including energy, healthcare, education, and motion pictures. At aerospace giant Lockheed Martin, he created and led a group of innovative engineers and designers across all mission areas called Virgin World Labs. Richard joined Lockheed Martin in 2007 with the acquisition of 3D Solve, a North Carolina-based computer technology firm where he was founder and CEO. Prior to that, Richard was CEO at 3DVillage.com, which was acquired in 2001. 3D Village was a spin-off of Vertis Corporation, where he served for a decade on the executive management team that created several pioneering computer gaming companies, including Red Storm Entertainment with author Tom Clancy, iRock Entertainment with Ozzy Osbourne, and Timeline Computer Entertainment with author Michael Crichton. Today he's the CEO of Tenjo.ai, which mantra is improving businesses, industries, and people's lives by bringing machine learning and automation to the world. And this triggered me, hence I invited Richard to my podcast. We discuss how a pragmatic approach to solve everyday's problems can result in transformative impact. We too often don't realize the solution is right in front of our eyes and the technology is already available to solve it. Or if you want to put it in a different way, like William Gibson once quoted, the future is already here, it's just unevenly distributed. By listening to this podcast, you will learn three things. Firstly, why to get traction with innovation is not to overthink it and do endless research with uncertain outcomes, but instead be pragmatic to the low-hanging fruit problems unique to your industry that have a certain outcome, can be applied immediately, and scales radically, i.e. can bring a lot of positive impact to many people very, very quickly. Secondly, that in order to create transformative impact, one has to look across departmental, or even better, organizational boundaries to reduce redundancy and friction. And thirdly, the next century is about simulation. So those who become adept at it and are able to deliver solutions that help their customers to predict the future and be prepared for it, those companies will prevail. So to get things started, Richard, thank you for being on the podcast. And to get into the discussion, could you share with the audience a little bit about what drives you as an entrepreneur and what are your passions all about?
Well, I think my entire career has been about harnessing technology to solve interesting problems. It began in very, very early 90s, even to some extent the late 80s, working with real-time 3D game software to solve engineering problems, architectural visualization problems. One of the first most interesting problems was a problem for people in the film industry. So I worked on the first Mission Impossible movie with Brian De Palma in Pinewood Studios. And, you know, the problem they had, and we had done, my colleague David Smith had just done this for James Cameron, the movie The Abyss, if you've seen that. And that's probably a good example of a really technical problem that was solved easily by bringing new technologies to bear. He was trying to film this movie underwater in a nuclear reactor in South Carolina, the United States. And what we did is built a tool that let him create a little, set the focal length and aspect ratio inside of a real-time 3D environment. We built the entire set. And by moving through all the shots with the cinematographer, he found out that a third of the set never had to be built, saved him a lot of money. And we've been friends ever since. And we started working on a lot of projects in the film industry with that. But that's the sort of thing that drives me, is trying to bring technologies to bear on problems, to solve them in ways that humans alone cannot.
Yeah, that's the purpose of the podcast that I'm running. So what brought you to the idea, or what brought you to found Tanjo?
Well, it was really an extension of that idea. The previous company that I had created was called 3D Solve. David and I had done a couple of game companies back in the 90s with Tom Clancy and Michael Crichton and Ozzy Osbourne and a bunch of other people. I created one to take the game technology and apply it to a bunch of the problems like what I just described in the film industry. And Lockheed Martin, the big aerospace company, ended up acquiring our company. And I spent 5.5 years there running a group called Virtual World Labs.
Okay.
And that was across all the mission areas. If you know Lockheed Martin, you know they make spaceships and fighter planes, a very interesting group. But we got to play with virtual worlds and virtual reality, augmented reality, and AI. And it was there that I discovered the power of machine learning, which was very, very different from all of the other technologies in AI we've been playing with for a couple of decades with computer gaming. You know, computer gaming, we've always had to be good at artificial intelligence if you want to make convincing characters and convincing environments. But machine learning is a completely different thing. And that's what got me excited about it.
Exactly. So what is the big idea behind Tanjo?
Well, it's really that issue. And I wrote an article for TechCrunch back in 2015 about this idea of how do you pair humans with machines. And I think the critical issue for all organizations today, and that we came to that realization while we were at Lockheed, that the critical issue is you should be, no matter what your activity is, if you're a university or you're a company or you're a government or you're an individual, it's looking at whatever activity you're engaged in and trying to figure out what should humans be doing with our effort and our attention, and what should we be turning over to machines? And the answer to that question changes almost every year, almost every month now. But learning the power of machine learning, I realized that there's so many tasks and things that humans are still doing, like, you know, doing audits in accounting and things like that, that machines can do so much better with so much more accuracy and much faster. And organizations who understand that and figure that out will prevail. And those who don't, not only won't be competitive anymore, but they'll appear to be handicapped very soon. So that was the realization and why we started Tanjo.
So can you give an example of a solution that you've created?
Sure. So back in 2017, we've done a bunch of different things, but one that really stood out that was very easy to do, and that's what's interesting about this tech. You know, this, we talk a lot about machine learning and all the things that it might be able to do, like cure cancer and all sorts of things. But there's some very, very easy things that you can do very quickly that have a tremendous amount of value. So one thing we did last year in 2017 in the accounting industry, as I mentioned, there were some new rules coming out around revenue recognition and lease recognition. And accountants in the U.S. were going around having big meetings, trying to figure out how to prepare their clients for these new changes and how to prepare themselves. And they were kind of panicking a little bit. And when I went and spoke in Atlanta at a conference called Audit U, I realized that machine learning was their answer. So we worked with one firm to teach it just the rules around revenue recognition. These are just basic accounting rules. Yeah. And then we trained it on every single sales agreement we could find from every kind of company on the planet we could find. And it was interesting because the first meeting we sat down and the company we were building this for gave us about 200 contracts. And we looked at them and we said, no, let me explain again how machine learning works. Can you give me 10 million contracts? That's what we really need, right? And that's what's unusual about machine learning is that you really do need that massive volume of things to train it on, and it can go through it very quickly. We ended up finding 4 million contracts, everything, you know, and across all industries, software sales, manufacturing sales, real estate, you name it. And it ranged from a very simple purchase order that someone may have written on one piece of paper all the way up to, you know, a 100-page contract that has milestone payments and warranties and disclaimers and all that legal language. And we had to teach our system what all that stuff meant, how to recognize it in unusual documents, and how to help the accountants apply that. So we did all of that in 3 months. And now the accounting industry will never be the same. And that's the kind of thing where, you know, if you can do something one time and have it not only pay off a 10x, 10 times return on investment, but that return on investment is an annuity, right? It's something you're going to get every single year. So the earlier you do that, the more effective and competitive you're going to be.
Exactly. And that's what a lot of people have to get ahead, their head around.
Yeah. I mean, I'll give you another quick one. This was with JP Morgan, largest company on the planet, right? I mean, they'll tell you that. Big investment banking company. We met with them when they were beginning to look at machine learning. And what we do for companies very quick, usually if we understand they don't have a deep machine learning strategy yet, is we'll do a workshop to help them find those easy projects that have those big impacts on their business. Yeah. And usually we find a list, you know, the first day. So we just do a 1 day workshop and go, here's a list of things. They took one of those things and didn't even use us. They went out on their own because they have a lot of resources and built this. But they were spending at the time 340,000 hours a year just reviewing loan agreements, right? And they were doing that with, you know, my joke is they were doing that with New York lawyers. So let's figure that's, I don't know, $800 an hour. So that's a $300 million expense, give or take a couple million, right? Yeah. But they just assumed like this is part of our business. We have to spend this every year. It's just part of our business. Yeah. After they implemented their machine learning solution, which only took about 4 months, they'll never have that. I mean, they didn't get it to zero. Let's say it's down to 30,000 hours of New York lawyer time, but they've just saved themselves with a one-time investment of maybe $1 million. They got a $240 million annuity.
Yep.
And that's what everyone should be waking up and looking at this carefully. You can afford not to say, you know, not to look at this capability.
But these are examples at the end that are more about automation rather than augmentation, correct?
Yeah. So that's the easy stuff, what we call the low hanging fruit, looking at like reimbursement codes and in insurance or anything where it's somebody trying to look at a lot of text and read it and, you know, if especially if it's millions of pages of text, look at it, read it all, come to some judgment, and then give a human being, you know, a set of options or some advice around that. That's the easy thing. We're also expanding beyond that to some of the more softer skills that we think are really interesting, like, you know, trying to determine what does your organization know? That's an interesting question, right? Just stop and say, like, even if I ask that of the JP Morgan guys, I'm like, what does your organization know? Like, who knows what? Where are your experts? How does information enter your organization? Who champions it? Who challenges it? How do you make the decisions that you made in the last 2 years? And they're like, I don't know. I guess we could, survey people? I don't. I'm like, so what we realize there is the thing that doesn't exist or didn't exist then is the equivalent of like CRM for knowledge. Like, what if you could have a machine learning companion system that was monitoring everything that was going on in your organization, and it could tell you, here are the main areas where your people are spending their attention and their effort on, you know, by topic. And here are the people who are most expert, here are the people who are least expert. When a set of your workers, your information workers, encounter a specific kind of problem, what resources did they go to first, and how effective was that? So one of the things that we've built is a system because and it's the same capability. It's this machine learning thing that's sort of, instead of reading all of these loan agreements or lease agreements or tax returns, it's actually just ingesting all of the knowledge of the firm.
Yep.
Let's say it's an architecture firm, or it can be an accounting firm, or it can be a bank or something. And, you know, a better example is, let's take an institution of higher education. One of the things we're building right now is one brain that is going to understand deeply all of the knowledge gained and all of the best practices across 58 colleges in North Carolina. So every single community college in North Carolina, one brain will rule all of that and will help reduce, you know, redundancy, like someone starting to create a new course about drone piloting or 3D printing. Instead of them having to go and recreate it from scratch, they can say, like, the brain can say, oh, on one of these other campuses, there's a set of people who've already created something. You might want to take a look at that. Let me recommend you call this person. So it'll bring to your attention, here's some resources. Here's some curriculum that's created. Here's some videos. Here's some other information objects. And here's some people that you should go and talk with to shorten the path that it takes you to become to accomplish whatever your task is.
Yeah, that's where the real power is going to be.
Yeah.
To give that knowledge across something that you can't even comprehend.
Exactly.
Because who knows? I mean, you know, maybe some colleagues in another college next to you, but not about all the colleges in that particular area, let alone, you know, if you take it even broader space.
Yeah, and that every company, like when I was at Lockheed Martin, obviously very, very large company, 130,000 some employees. And we didn't call it, you know, you hear about people talking about siloed information. We call them cylinders of excellence, right? But the thing is, you saw that very often where parts of the organization didn't know what other parts were doing. And sometimes there's a very good reason for that, but many times it's just because communication is difficult in any organization. The bigger it gets, the more that becomes a cost. As there's a guy named Ronald Coase, C-O-A-S-E, who talked about that and saying, you know, if you want to get a large organization to go after a singular goal, you have to spend a lot of resources and energy and money on recognizing that we aren't ants or bees. You can't just assume people are going to understand the right thing to do. You have to communicate to them where they should go and where they should be spending resources and who they should be collaborating with.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, of course, where the market is going anyway. You know, these networked organizations that are going to be much flatter. They're going to be organized around projects whereby there's people with the right skills and the right level of diversity come in and deal with the project, and then you move on.
Yeah, this even is virtual.
Exactly. So on your website, it says, we help corporations to be disruptors, not disrupted. Mm-hmm. Interesting phrase. Can you elaborate a little bit more on that?
Yeah, I think it really comes down to that idea about, you know, it's hard for me to go and sit in a meeting with someone, and I've met with some Fortune 50 companies very recently, in fact, who I felt did not have a good grasp of and a deep understanding of machine learning technologies and what they should be doing. Mm-hmm. And I look at them and I just go, look, it's whether you do it with me or not with me, you need to understand the implications of your decision. You can't put this off. You have the sooner you do it, the earlier these benefits will happen. And I tell you, just from, you know, I've sold a lot of software in my day, computer games and 3D design tools, all sorts of things. But I've never, what's fun about what we do now is I can go on there with a massive amount of confidence to say, like, how can you afford not to be looking at something that can pay you a 10x ROI? Or even, I'll tell you, the best example we have so far is 600. A one-time investment, you get a 600x validated return immediately, you know, as soon as this is deployed. And there's a chance, depending on what the activity is, where that might be an annuity, where you're never going to have that cost again. How can you afford to ignore that? You can't, or you're not going to be relevant very soon. So that's really why, you know, we're looking for those that are raising their hand. And still some people are saying, we're not ready yet. We want to think about this some more. And it's going to take two or more meetings with KPMG and PwC and right before they'll finally agree with the things that we're telling them. But as we keep pulling, as we do more and more of these and keep pulling out these case studies, we did one for I can't say who it is, but a large chicken company recently. And there's some indication it may exceed our 600X number in terms of the return on investment they're going to get.
Unbelievable.
I mean,
the people that are kind of going to take it a negative way and say it's likely from a very low number, but...
Well, we try to say, look, we even have shirts and everything made up that say the 10x, but we just say, look, if I can give you a 2x return, isn't that good?
That's fantastic.
You get that from your last enterprise, you know, implementation of whatever. And typically that's not the case, right? I can almost guarantee it.
Fantastic, right? So, I mean, out of all the things that you learned over the last years, in the industries that you've been working with the 3D industry you've been involved in and now since a couple of years with machine learning and artificial intelligence, what do you believe are the top three things that make a product remarkable?
I live in kind of the world of software, so we're always looking for scalability, you know, something that can be implemented and then scales across an organization or across the world. You know, two investors in my last company, one of them was Reid Hoffman, the guy who started LinkedIn. He was one of the PayPal guys with Elon Musk and all those guys. One of the smartest people I know. And he's always sort of urging me to think about things that scale radically, right?
True.
And really bring a lot of positive impact to a lot of people very quickly. The other person is Joichi Ito. He's now the director of the MIT Media Lab. Very smart guy. I've known him for a while. He was in Japan. You know, he was the sort of creator of InfoSeek. He was a DJ in Japan, I think, early on when we first met him. And now he's a very smart guy. And Reid and Joey actually met on the advisory board of my last company. But Joey talks a lot about embracing the principles of the internet, right? Which is, you know, small pieces loosely joined, try to be content with systems that aren't complete. And, you know, the other thing he says is compasses, not maps. So we're not going to a specific place. We're just heading in a certain direction. Right? Like generally, which direction do we want to go? And so when we architect systems today, we kind of build them, start looking for difficult problems. And then of course, the technology ends up adapting to the problem. And that's the important thing for me. I don't like to build technology just for technology's sake.
Exactly.
I want to find really difficult problems that haven't been solved before or you know, ways that we can solve them more efficiently and effectively. And then scale that. And so that's the kind of thing that, those are the kinds of things that we build.
So how do you identify these difficult problems? Do you have a framework for that? I mean, what questions do you ask?
Well, I mean, it's pretty universal. I mean, the reason I was having so much fun at Lockheed, when they acquired my company, I was going to stay for 2 years because that's when the little pots of gold ran out. But after that, I stayed another 4 because I was having so much fun because they do have all the toys there. And I was able to encourage them to let me work on problems like in energy, you know, and space travel and education and healthcare, because there's no shortage of those sorts of problems, right? And I really think that one of the reasons we still kill 120,000 people a year in hospitals in the United States unnecessarily is just because we have bad ideas. You know, we have people that haven't fully embraced technologies and methods that can make humans better, make humans perform better in these increasingly complex areas.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's a general principle that we think of, like what kind of problem really affects, you know, a billion people where they don't quite yet understand the technologies that are available to them that can solve them. I mean, take autonomous vehicles. I mean, we have the technology right now to avoid 40,000 deaths and 1 million injured people in the United States alone every single year, but we can't get the policy and the infrastructure together yet to solve that. And, you know, get it to where, like, if we had enough will and enough money and, you know, can get the policy and the infrastructure in place, we would not have those deaths anymore.
Yeah, true.
Right. The technology exists right now. And that bothers me. That's the kind of thing that really bugs me. It reminds me of the William Gibson quote, right? You know, the future's already here. It's just unevenly distributed.
Yeah.
Awfully unfair to the people who aren't being able to avail themselves of that.
Yeah.
You know, I was in South America just 3 weeks ago down in Medellin, looking around and seeing the sorts of things they're doing there where they're trying to make their city better and they have a big effort in place, very intelligently, I think, to bring in all those technology solutions, all those new ideas for urban design and transportation and health and education to try to like leap ahead of this, like, you know, because they've had a couple of decades where they've kind of been repressed in their development because of all the violence that was going on down there. Now that they seem to have that at, you know, in abeyance. They're like, let's bring all these new ideas in and let's implement them. And it's really just about willpower because the tech and the capability exists. So we should be doing that everywhere.
Yep, true.
And that's what we try to do with our technology is, you know, I'm not, one of the things I preach about quite a bit internally is, hey, you know, we don't do R&D here in my company, right? R&D is for the government and for universities and places like that. So I think in terms of, and this comes from Alan Kay, if you know Alan from Xerox PARC, he taught me this, that, you know, there's research development and then there's sort of integration, R&D and I. You can really help people quickly if you're just doing integration or lowercase d as opposed to uppercase d development. But don't do research. I mean, that takes a long time and is uncertain of the outcome. The things that I build have a certain outcome that can be applied immediately. And it's about looking out there and finding, you know, let's make sure every hospital has checklists. Let's make sure every hospital has prognostic maintenance of their equipment and better, you know, interface design. And let's reduce the error rate in ICUs from, you know, 1% to 0.1%. Let's just start there with just stuff we can implement very easily and quickly so people stop dying.
Yeah.
That's what drives us.
Very pragmatic.
Yeah. I mean, it's pragmatic, but it also it's very fulfilling because you can see, you know, you're not having to slave away trying to invent, you know, a 100-year battery or something like DARPA is trying to do, where you might die before you can see the result, or, you know, colonizing Mars or curing cancer. Those are all things we need to be spending money on, but there's so many other things that can have an immediate impact with the technology just laying on the shelf right now.
Exactly. So, I mean, since you've created all kinds of solutions, and one of the things you mentioned earlier on in the podcast was that people are still sometimes reluctant to listen, reluctant to, well, to consider. I mean, mm-hmm. What is your most kind of valuable lesson that you learned in the sales process of these types of solutions?
Well, we really try, you know, we try to charge for those workshops, and that's our sales process. And then in that workshop, pretty quickly, we'll find those who are not ready yet for whatever reason. They're just not ready. You know, it's the whole classic more crossing the chasm model, right? Where there's some people are going to wait until enough people in their market space are doing it before they jump because they're just not early adopters or they just don't have enough confidence in themselves or their organizations to take those steps. And that's fine. You know, I walk away shaking my head very often because I go like, man, what you're doing is not the right thing to be doing. And it's going to cost you. And I can see it. It's kind of like Cassandra. You know, I have this Cassandra complex of like, I can see the doom in front of you and I'm telling you it and you won't believe me. And that's all I can do is tell you. And then we move very quickly away from those people. Now, they very often come back to us. You know, one of the problems we have is we're still a small startup-like company, right? So we've had people take our workshops, decide to do something like JP Morgan or another big bank or another big insurance company we work with. And they'll go off and they're like, well, let's go try to do this with Microsoft or Google or IBM or you know, KPMG or any of the big guys.
Yeah.
But one of the things we delight in doing is once they get frustrated with some of those big implementations and are spending way more than they expected, we go back to them and go, hey, we can finish this for you, or we can actually do the whole thing now at a fraction of the price if you want us to do it. So we, you know, we thrive on that price performance just because we're still very small and nimble. So that's part of our strategy too. But yeah, but you know, the great thing is these things scale, and the difference between us and the IBMs and the Microsofts and some of these other folks is there's a lot of people that are trying to do this as software as a service, you know, sign up, you know, we'll do the implementation and then you're going to have this monthly fee or annual fee forever. And we've got your data safely over here in our little bunker of servers. But we go to the people and very often and say, wouldn't you like to have your own machine learning brain inside your firewall under your control with all this capability with an API that lets you extend it yourselves? And that's kind of our secret sauce right now is we're moving very quickly to those people like the North Carolina Community College System who say, like, we don't want to be outsourcing to the big guys and paying lots of money for that. We'd like to have it under our control and seeing where our information is flowing and not worrying about someone else tapping into it or mishandling it or whatever. It's under our control. We even have one bank customer who that what they're doing is so they're so concerned about privacy and
of course
that sort of thing is that it's on a machine that's not even connected to the network. You know, so they just run, it's a basic Dell-like computer with a really high-end NVIDIA GPU sitting on it that costs like $3,000 that runs their machine learning experiments around the things that they're doing. And that's fine. We'll allow them to do that. We're like, here's an entire brain trained just on what you care about, who's only going to perform that function, and it's not connected to anything. And we'll sell that to you.
Coming back to on-premise again.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're getting towards the half hour. Out of all the lessons that you've learned and the wisdom that you've gained, what would you advise leaders and companies to do different? What is a key question they should ask themselves?
I think it really is about, you know, it's great that they're hiring all these consultants like the KPMGs and Deloitte's and PwC's who come in to advise on digital transformation and how you need to change. But it's having those seminars alone is not enough. Look for the low-hanging fruit, the things that are unique in your industry that or your business that you can implement very quickly that get you those returns. And then do it. Even potentially build your own team internally to do it if you want, but get it done quickly because it will become addictive to you. Anybody who's ever run a business, you know, if I start having, you know, seeing that there are costs that I just assume are in my business that start falling away and going to nothing, it's a very energizing experience that sort of raises all the boats. It lets you spend more on the employees you do have, right?
Yeah.
You know, I was part of a war game a couple of years ago at the Pentagon called the Force of the Future. And it's a public thing. It was in the USA Today and everything. And I was on the red team, you know, the adversary force with Alan Kay and Michael Jones, who is the CTO of Google Earth and a couple other people. And we were looking at, you know, what's the force of the future? And it was like a 3-day exercise. We had the Navy, the Marines, the Army, everyone, and they're trying to figure that out. And the conclusion we came to is like, hey, you know, and the force of the future is going to have 20 times the strike capacity that it has today, 15 years from now. Yeah. But you're only going to need about 10% of the people. What does that mean? Well, it means you really need to invest heavily. The way we invest in an F-35 pilot today or an astronaut, you'd be investing in your people to control all of these technologies. So education changes and
true.
Even how you care for them and everything. It's more like the pilot model, less like the, you know, the Army grunt model. And I think that is going to be true for companies as well.
Yes, I agree with that. Like you're saying in the beginning, you can't sometimes even comprehend how this is going to change, but those numbers speak for themselves.
Yeah, there is one more thing before we sign off. My publicist is sort of prodding me here that I didn't mention, Tundra just made the Gartner Cool List, you know, the big analyst company.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
For one of the capabilities that we found with our machine learning system, and that's its ability to understand people. So if I have enough data about you or anyone that you're, you know, from social media or it can be demographic information or purchase data from Nielsen or that sort of thing, I can model your behavior pretty deeply. And use that to try to create better products for you and better communications with you. That's a product we have called Tanjo Animated Personas or TAPS.
Exactly, yeah.
And that's a brand. And, you know, one of our customers is in Europe. It's a UK financial institution. Uh-huh. The reason they actually, and this sort of sounds counterintuitive, but the reason they went to us is because this system is representative. It doesn't tie to actually personal, you know, personally identifiable information. It's they're able to build their own synthetic population of the UK. And then based on this little sim world that they've made, they can test ideas for new financial products and to understand what do people really want and how do we need to communicate it? How do we need to price it? And the old way of doing that was with surveys and focus groups, but those are all flawed for a wide variety of reasons. And that would take another podcast of equal length to this one to talk about. But this is just another really interesting capability that we discovered from machine learning. And going back to the company, one of the other interesting things you can do is once that brain is installed the way we described it, and it's sort of helping all of your information workers across your organization, whether it's 130,000 people at Lockheed or, you know, 500 people at a medium-sized company, it can reveal what your people actually care about. You know, what are the values and what is your culture? That's another important question. You know, Peter Drucker said, culture eats strategy, right?
Yeah.
for lunch, I think was his full quote. And what, but most people don't, like, what is your culture? It's like, you can have a bunch of cheerleading statements about what you think you want it to be, but what is it exactly?
Yeah, that's right.
If you had a system that could tell you that on a day-to-day basis, like, you guys are on target for the cultural values that you want to have to be successful, or you're drifting out of those values.
Yeah.
And maybe you need to take some action to try to bring everybody back focused on what really matters and what your customers are going to care about. So that's another interesting area too.
Yeah, it's all these insights, and then kind of the what you can do with it from a professional perspective to take it to the next level. Because these things, I mean, who could tell what your culture is about? You know 10 people around you, but you don't know, I mean, what the culture is going to be about in the office 20 miles away or in the next country.
That's right.
And that's where these technologies really, really come in handy. This is, yeah, very powerful.
That's right.
So, yeah, last question. What's next for you? What's your greatest aspiration?
Well, you know, we're having quite a bit of fun right now with these technologies. I mean, the things that I care most about, if I could wake up every day and do one thing, it would probably be focused on education or healthcare, but let's say education first. I think that's something that we're, in many countries, especially in the United States, we've taken our eye off the ball a bit. I'm deeply concerned about that. We are in an information age. We're trying to create, you know, free, you know, democratic government institutions around the world. We seem to not be doing a good job right now because some of the technologies we've created have been manipulated and are, I think, sending us in the wrong direction. But if I could wake up every day and do one thing, it would be, you know, bringing some of these technologies to bear in education so that we have a next generation of people that grow up to be fluent with these capabilities, but are also focused on the, you know, with the right values and the right sort of outcomes. Like, what kind, we should be thinking about not creating workers, but what kinds of global citizens do we want to create through the process? And we're not doing that now. So I spend a lot of my philanthropy and free time working, like even James Cameron, who I mentioned earlier, he and his wife had a school or have a school called Muse out in Malibu, California, or Calabasas, that is taken out a clean sheet of paper and is trying to create this new, some of these new models for citizens of the future with education. So I was on the board there for 4 years. I'm on the board of another school in North Carolina, the Wake Tech Community College, and I was also an advisor to the North Carolina Virtual Public School. You know, so I'm deeply interested in those sorts of things. So as we swing through the ball on Tanjo and move forward, I want to get more involved in that side of things. And how can we have technology help teachers and help students have better outcomes for the future?
True. And also learn them different skills.
Yep.
Exactly. Like the problem-solving skills and the creativity and the things that you need in the 21st century.
Exactly right.
Exactly. So what would be your big ask to the audience? I mean, how can the audience help you?
I think just having the same sort of ecosystem mindset as I think I do would be helpful, and trying to urge, if you're in an organization today who's reticent about adopting new technologies like machine learning, or the two things I would say are machine learning and simulation, right?
Yeah.
The machine learning, it helps you understand your own organization, helps you automate tasks you should be automating, which frees up the humans who were doing these sort of drudgery tasks.
True.
To focus on those more creative problem-solving sorts of activities. And then the other thing is, you know, I do a conference every year for the Department of Defense called the Simulation Century. And the thesis statement behind that is the last century was about the recorded image. It's how we understood, you know, what happened in the 20th century with television and video and that sort of thing. And I say this next century is about simulation. So again, those who become adept at it, at being able to predict the future and be prepared for it by using simulation capabilities, which are AI and machine learning together with maybe some visualization tools, those people will prevail. And so that's incredibly important. So if you're in a position to influence your school, your community, your government, or your company, bring these messages to them and have them get involved in these strategies earlier rather than later.
True.
And of course, choose Tanjo if we're available.
Obviously. So where can people go to find out more about Tanjo and about you?
So yeah, if you just go to tanjo.net, that's where our sort of brochure-y part of how we describe our company publicly. We have another site called tanjo.ai, which is really for those who are using some of our online services directly. So it won't be, it'll point you back to tanjo.net.
Yep.
For the simulation capability, if you go to ultisim.com, that's ultisim.com, you'll see a lot of the game-based simulation capabilities that we're using.
Cool.
To help companies and people and education and a bunch of other areas. And my personal Twitter handle is Metaversial, Metaversial. So follow me as we continue to have this deepening discussion.
Okay. Thank you very much. This was really inspiring. And yeah, possibly we should do another podcast on the products, Tanjo.
Yeah, TAP. I would love to. Absolutely. Yeah, TAP is getting really interesting very fast.
Exactly. Now, this you gave a lot of good insights from a number of angles, which is what the audience wants to hear and where the ideas are actually coming from. So this is very good evangelism for what is to come and where the real power is going to be. So thanks for that.
All right. Thank you very much for reaching out. I enjoyed it greatly.
The pleasure was fully on my side, Richard. And to everybody else on the podcast, thank you for tuning in today. I had the honor to speak to Richard Boyd, CEO of Tanjo AI. The goal of this podcast is to share compelling ideas and showcases to inspire what can be when technology and people blend in the right way. It's my strong belief that too much focus is put on automating people out of a process, in other words, cutting costs, rather than scenarios where the unique strength of people are augmented with technology to change the established rules and to deliver a value that was unimaginable before. So, with this podcast, I want to make a contribution to change this, to create a broader awareness of what can be, to accelerate the adoption by bringing together you, a tribe of like-minded people and organizations, and lastly, to accelerate the initiatives and solutions that could be created because one idea inspires the other. So if you know about stories that are worth sharing, please send me a message. Building the momentum all starts with revealing the ideas, and that starts with you. If you want to have more information, read my blogs, or obtain information on working with me, just visit me on my website, valueinspiration.com. Thank you for tuning in, and you could do me a big favor by rating the podcast or provide me with your feedback. I'll see you shortly in a new episode.